Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along Show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 233. Today's, y'all don't know when we record this. This one's recorded in the daytime.
It is noon on Easter Sunday.
Yeah, it's really weird. Kenny was out of town this week, and that's why we're recording without him. But because we didn't need to adhere to any schedule, we waited to the last minute, because that's how it be. Since I'm talking, I'll go. Not a ton of cool stuff happened for me in the last week, with the exception of I got my new demo bike, which is a 2026 Kona Heihei G10 CR. I think that's all the numbers and letters and stuff. It's their 130, 120 bike.
That was a long enough name. My eyes kind of like glazed over for a second.
And for those of you that are in the Wayback Machine, you're like, Matt said that a 130, 120 trail bike is the worst bike you could buy because it has all the weight of a big travel bike and it's just a short travel bike, but it's not fast like an XC bike. Well, we used to shit on Dropper Post.
Well, and also you didn't buy it. It's your demo bike. So like, if you hate it, there's no consequences.
There's no consequence, but I did get one ride in on it, and with the exception of one little error that is very easy for me to fix, I'm not going to bash Kona. They've gone through some things in the last couple of years, and they just made a simple mistake.
They just lost the transmission setup guide document, and that's it.
Yeah, and it... How do I go through all this? Bike came with transmission 90 alloy wheels, and alloy bar. I put on my own carbon wheels, which are Traverse SLs. They're 350 hub Traverse wheels from Specialized. Put on my Recon 2.6-2.4 combo, power saddle, and a carbon Envy bar, and I rode it. And I like it. So, I mean, I only rode it for 54 minutes or something, but yeah, I know that I need to do some work to get the suspension to feel exactly how I want it, but it's one ride impressions. It's going to be a fun bike. And with the design of the bike, I can run two 26-ounce water bottles in an unorthodox position.
It's
with
not that unorthodox.
But I'm not using any aftermarket parts. I'm using just what's in the frame. I didn't need any wolf tooth B-rad plates or anything.
Have you looked at those in a medium? If I had one, do you think that I could also run two bottles on the down tube like you have?
I'll know this week because we have a medium, but we haven't unboxed it yet. So
my guess would be I might have to use like a wolf tooth B-rad if I had one of those, but it's pretty nice.
Yeah.
They did a good job of not making the front triangle microscopic, which is nice.
And the way I have it built, I got an XC insert in the rear tire, and it weighs 30 pounds. And I'm not saying...
I thought you said 33.
No, my stump jumper weighs 33.
Okay.
My stump jumper was 32 or 33, ready to ride.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know why I thought that.
But I weighed it at work yesterday with a hanging scale.
Yeah, that makes a difference.
And it oscillated between 29 pounds, 15 ounces, and 30 flat. So I don't want to say it's a 30-pound bike when it's really 30 pounds, 11 ounces. It's 30 pounds. So it's got a Pike Ultimate, Super Deluxe Ultimate, and I don't know. I think it's going to be a good just all-around trail bike for me because I don't want to say I don't care, but it goes uphill pretty well. I mean, it doesn't go uphill like my Canyon, but it also doesn't want to kill me on the way down. So that's pretty cool. Yeah, That's most of my week bicycle-related, and then not bicycle-related. Today is Sunday. On Friday, we did four brakes and two shocks and replaced the rear bumper valance on Andrea's 4Runner. And then yesterday, I started replacing the four shocks and two taillights on my new Frontier. And
isn't that a Star Trek thing?
Final Frontier.
Oh, okay.
Maybe this is the Final Frontier. I do plan on keeping it for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And I stripped out, well, I don't know that I stripped this out. I needed to disconnect the upper ball joint and disconnect the sway bar link in order to get the front coilover shock out. I bought preloaded coils or a coil strut assembly because I'm lazy. And the truck has 114,000 miles on it. I don't know if they've ever been replaced. Am I afraid of a spring compressor? No. But when you have the option...
You just put like 100 zip ties on it, it'll be fine.
When you have the option of buying something that has everything you need for roughly the same price and it makes your life easier, that's what I did. And I did the way I work on things in the yard is I strap everything to a tree because we don't have any level ground. So the vehicles are level, like driver to passenger, but they're running downhill, you know, nose to tail or tail to nose, depending on how the vehicle's parked. And it's strapped to a tree, so it's impossible for it to fall off a jack stand because the truck can't move because it would have to bring down like a 10-inch juniper tree with it. So I don't know. If that happens one day, I guess it was just meant to fall off the jack stands and crush me to death. But I'm not...
And pull a tree down.
Yeah, like if it pulls a tree over, like God was really pissed off at me.
And juniper roots go a long way.
Yeah. So I started on the sunny side. So I did passenger front, passenger rear, driver front. And when I was doing the driver front, the last few turns of removing that sway bar link, the nut went from pretty loose. They're like a semi-locking nut. I don't know what they're called. It went from like barely not able to turn it by finger to like, oh, I need to use a wrench for the last few turns. And the nut wouldn't go back on. So what I did is I left my truck sitting there on jack stands. I made a call to AutoZone. They had the part that I needed. I went to town. I rode my new Kona. I got my part. I came home. I ate dinner. I went to bed. This morning, I installed that part, put the wheel on, checked all my lug nuts, installed my taillights, and drove the truck around the neighborhood. And I'm like, wow, a suspended Final Frontier is pretty good. And let's see. I think that's really all that's going on this week. Or that's gone on in the last week for me. Mesa Verde is getting closer every day, and fuck,
yeah.
It's gonna be hard.
He was like, I don't know if I'm gonna do it. I'm like, just do it. It'll be fine. I don't know if it'll actually be fine, but it'll be fine. You'll have friends there. That'll make it better. I think there's a difference if you have friends there versus like if you were there all by yourself.
We're not gonna talk about it anymore until after the event.
Okay, is it my turn?
I mean, it's not Kenny's turn.
Well, let's see. I went to Memphis last week. It was a little bit of a rushed trip. I needed to go and visit with my parents. My dad's old and he's not doing great. I mean, he's 85 now, I think, or I don't know. He's up there and he's basically outlived all of his, like family history wise, he's outlived everyone. By a few years now, probably like 4 or 5 years. He's, you know, he's definitely slowing down. He's lost a lot of weight, and I think it's from his blood sugar medication, but he has to keep taking it. But I think my mom's going to talk to the doctor about that. But along with that, what happens when you're old and you lose a lot of weight, you lose muscle, and so his balance isn't great. And I'm, you know, concerned about that because their house is not something that's made for a person with poor balance to get around in without falling down. So yeah, kind of worried about him. And, you know, mentally he's declining a little bit. So I spent a lot of time just helping my mom kind of, they live in a gigantic house and they do because they wanted like living, they wanted everything on a first floor. And to do that with the availability of houses when they were going from one to another, they just had to get one that had everything on the first floor, but then also had like a massive like fucking hotel upstairs basically. So just spent a lot of time helping my mom with cleaning up, organizing, brought a lot of stuff home from their garage, caught a raccoon while I was out there. They've had problems with raccoons getting in their attic, and I did the most like old school trapper thing ever on the way there in Arkansas, like right on the Arkansas, the western Arkansas border. There's a trapper supply place not far from the interstate. So I talked to the guy ahead of time and said, hey, I need some raccoon traps, and I wanted dog-proof raccoon traps, which are not legal in Colorado, but they're perfectly legal just about everywhere else. And I have a gallon bag full of beaver casters. Is there a way I could bring those and do a little trade? And that's what I did. Traded a couple of pounds of beaver caster for, which are used for a lot of different lure making, not just beaver, but other ones too. But traded that with the guy for 4 raccoon traps. And I caught 1 raccoon while I was there, and I've saved the pelt from it so I can make a raccoon hat. It will probably be raccoon and some other fur because I don't think I have enough raccoon for a full hat. Definitely want to make something cool out of it. What else? Didn't really get to do a lot of like social stuff with other people while I was there. I mean, I don't really keep in contact with too many people from Memphis now. Talked to listener Mark while I was there, which was nice. He gave me a hand with some raccoon stuff. And I visited Matt's family for a half day and got to shoot some really cool guns with his dad and buddy Ernie. And they're a lot of fun to hang out with. They're just really nice, kind people. So that was a very enjoyable little break from the kind of monotonous
hustle and bustle.
Yeah, kind of from like the monotonous stuff I was doing around my parents' house. I'm pretty concerned, like not concerned, pretty convinced that cities, like now that I've lived out in the middle of nowhere for a decent amount of time, I'm pretty convinced that large cities with like everything you can possibly imagine in multiple stores and locations and like just all over the place, they're like zoos for humans. It's like people are kind of stuck there because they like the convenience, they're close to where they work and close to everything they need, but like they need more enrichment in their enclosure. So like there's 12 different stores in one shopping center that all sell like different colors of the same clothes. And I don't know. It's
from the woman whose wardrobe is exclusively tan, green, or black.
Yep. Yep. I wear
what she's really saying is they have evil colors there like yellow and blue.
No, I mean, I could get that stuff too. I just don't like it. But yeah, so I don't enjoy being in a city at all. I very much dislike it because I don't know, it's just really stressful. And it was hot most of the time, but that's I won't bore you with those details, but yeah, that's my theory. Cities are just zoos for humans. But since I've been back, I've had to like go through all the stuff I brought back from my parents' house and kind of organize that a little bit. And I have, what else have I been doing?
Turkey scout.
Yeah, I've been out turkey scouting. There's a spot where I can...
There's no turkeys in Fremont and Chaffee County.
Oh, it's okay. I mean, I don't think our listeners are going to be like, I don't know, coming... I mean, look, if we had a listener that wanted to come out here and turkey hunt, I would give them some recommendations, but...
It would be like those recommendations where you found on that forum where it like has the people driving a big circle in the town.
Sure.
Wait, you don't remember that?
I do remember that. There was some guy that was, I don't remember, you probably remember it better than I do, because I didn't even remember that. Like, some guy was asking about elk in a certain spot, and people are like, you want to turn here, and then turn here, and then turn here, and you're going to be where there's just, like, a herd that's always around. And I looked on a map, and someone had literally just given him instructions on how to, like, drive a large loop around this one little town in the San Luis Valley, and it was... kind of funny because everyone took it very seriously. But yeah, so I've been turkey scouting. I've got a spot where I kind of found when I was mountain lion.
Motherfuckers be like, I know a spot, and then take you here.
Yeah, and it's...
You know what my favorite part about turkey season is?
What?
This bitch can carry a turkey by herself.
None of my turkey spots are as like out of the...
If you kill a turkey by yourself and you can't get it out, I'm not coming.
Yeah, that's true. Well, most of my turkey spots are like within a few miles of the car. So they just don't go up in high elevation like
that,
the other
animals. That mountain lion spot was a couple miles from the car. It was just a couple of miles of hell.
5 miles. But anyway, there's a spot where I can cross the river in one little square of public land and get into this like massive system of just drainages and ridges and like, it's really like, it's an awesome place to just go and like hike around. It's kind of creepy because for one, no one goes in there because you have to cross the river to get there and there's no trails or anything within miles. So like number one, people generally kind of stick on trails. And number two, like the added process of like, you have to wear waders to cross the river. Or at least like you would need like some hip waders or something because the water is like above your knees. It moves pretty quick, too. But yeah, you got to cross the river, then take your waders off and put your boots on and go hike around. But I found this mountain lion hunting, and there's a bunch of like there's bones everywhere. I kind of just in my head when I think of a name for that place, it's like just the boneyard because there's just mountain lions in there. Plenty of mountain lions in there. And when I was mountain lion hunting in there, I found like a bunch of turkey tracks. which is weird because it's a really, really arid, dry area. And there's no just creeks like on the map, and there are no really obvious creeks. But I knew since I saw this turkey sign, it's like, well, they're either just in here for the winter and they peck at the snow to get water, or there are, you know, there's a spring or two in here somewhere where they're getting water, because birds drink a lot of water. And so I went back yesterday and saw some turkeys, a little group of hens, and then I found all in this one maybe like 8th mile section of a little side drainage, an old cabin, an elk shed that was just enormous, and water. I found the water. It was just a little spring, but it was flowing, and it's been so super dry. Like, this has to flow year round just based on like the plants and stuff growing around there. But it was just a really, really cool spot. I think there are a few more of those little springs in there. I just haven't found them yet, but I definitely, you know, I plan on turkey hunting in my usual spot where I always go opening day because it's just my favorite. But, you know, if I need to, I'll go over to that place along the river because it seems like it might be a pretty good spot, especially since no one else is in there. But that was cool. And then this morning I went and got my game cameras from where I have my favorite spot set up. I always go and put a little ground blind in there. I put some cameras in there. And this morning I went to get my camera cards, and there was a turkey gobbling like not far off. And there was another, you know, like group of turkeys walking around on the road, like not far from there. And then I looked at my camera and had a group of turkeys that were right in front of me. I mean, like 10 feet in front of my blind. And this one young male turkey, is called a Jake, was just harassing this group of 3 hens right in front of my blind on camera. So that was kind of funny. But yeah, so I'm pumped. Turkey season starts next Saturday, and I'm ready. It's a lot of fun.
Okay, now is when we talk about new shit.
Let me
open. And we have to wade through the, you know, April Fool's stuff.
Fucking April Fool's stuff. Let's see, what do I want to talk about first? None of this stuff is really all that interesting to me.
Cam Jones has a new FKT on White Rim.
How fast did he do it?
So Keegan set the record in 21. He's gone 5 minutes faster. That was in the headline. I read this before, but no, I don't want a free Velo membership. Did it on a short travel bike, World Cup RC. So full suspension, no dropper.
Drop bar. That's cool.
Was it? I didn't.
A drop bar short travel mountain bike, which I think is like the ultimate gravel bike for anything that's not just like county road maintained gravel.
So also he did the Rafa Festive 500 in 13 hours this winter.
Wow.
Which for those uncultured is like 320 or 40 miles. Wow. It'd be really cool if this Velo article could just tell me the fucking time. 5:23:27. So
it's almost 100 miles.
Yeah. 18.7 mile an hour average. So
it's ripping.
Yep.
You know, that 5 minutes could definitely come from being on. Didn't Keegan do it on a gravel bike or no? I don't remember.
I don't think anyone's done it on gravel.
Okay.
Because I remember one of the people that had it at one point, they talked about they did some pre-riding on a gravel bike, and like it just wasn't.
Yeah.
They just could. It's doable. Like if you were going to go do White Rim and like, you know, a 2-night camping thing on your gravel bike, I think it's fine. But just sitting in the saddle and like drilling it for that long, the gravel bike just don't do it. So.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, I don't know what Keegan was on that. In my brain, Keegan had been riding a gravel bike, but I think, yeah, Matt's going to look it up. I was going to say, if it was gravel versus short travel cross country, you could almost say that the 5 minutes he made up just on descents.
It sounds like he did it. Oh, he did it flat bar.
So just flat. What, isn't he ride like an Allied or something?
No. Keegan was riding for Santa Cruz, and now he's on Specialized.
I don't know pro racing anymore, really. Some sad news from the industry. Paragon Machine Works is closing. They've cited, I guess, changes in the industry, lack of demand. I guess just fewer people making stuff where they need Paragon bits and pieces that they've made for so many years.
Yeah.
Some more 32-inch tires are coming out.
Yep.
Looks like we've already had the Aspen. Looks like they've confirmed the Dissector, and then there's a CST Patrol coming out in 32. I'm assuming 32 by 2.4 since that's what everything else has been, which is nice because I remember when 29 first came out, I think, you know, 32, we learned the lesson that like you should still have like a tire with some volume because 29,
well,
when they came out.
They weren't riding 26 tires with volume then either.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true.
Like they made 29ers the same size as 26ers, give or take a little bit. And yeah.
So a CST Patrol, we've got the Maxxis Dissector. There was a Schwalbe tire that they referenced in this article, but Schwalbe has said that it's going to be a minute before that's available. It looks like it would be a good rear tire. It's got like a pretty small tread in the middle, but then some pretty decent knobs off to the side. It's the Rick Race.
Learn how to sew if you're going to ride those.
What is this one? The Kenda.
Oh, God.
Dagger.
Do they still make tires?
They do, apparently. There's some like slick-ish tires, like cruiser tires.
Those would be big BMX tires, thank you. The wheelie bike kids are mad right now.
And some affordable options. We've got the OnTrack Transition. Never even heard of that brand, but it is a folding bead tire. I don't know if it is tubeless. So everything other than the Dissector is a pretty small tire, which is interesting. The Dissector is not even a big tire for like the category. And honestly, I mean, I get it. They wanted like a middle of the road kind of tire. It's not a big tire you would say is like a full trail tire or enduro tire. And it's not a cross country tire at all. I don't really like it. I don't know. Maybe it's just because that's what was on my e-bike when I first got it. And I just didn't like the traction just wasn't good. But maybe it's also because I was on like a heavier bike that wanted to push a little bit more. So could be that too. And they talk about tubes, but that's not a big deal because you can just put a sizable 29 inch, like a not cross country size 29 inch tube in there and just stretch it out and it'll be fine. And then there's this article shows a Safeway mountain bike with 32 inch wheels on it.
32 and QR. Hell yeah, brother.
Yeah. That's the first consumer 32-inch bike that you might see is the department store Safeway bike with quick-release axles, hydro disc brakes, and an alloy frame. They say steel fork. I'm guessing that's like a steel steer tube.
And stanchion, probably.
Yeah. And then the comment section is, you know, just ripping on 32-inch bikes, and I don't really care. I mean, I'd like to ride one. I don't know. I'd probably like it, but I don't dislike 29. I'm not going to be the curmudgeon that's like,
Where's the crown of that fork?
Not showing. So you don't know what it is.
I don't like that. Anyways, let's move on.
That is a lot of stanchion there too.
And the brake line is just touching the stanchion. Just keep moving.
Okay.
I can't. Close it faster.
All right. Have you looked at this mass damper?
We talked some about mass dampers with Kenny last time.
All right.
Let's talk about that next time.
Okay.
I don't really...
Again, it's something I would like to try, but I don't know...
I'm just going to make my own.
Yeah, I think you could just make your own.
Some springy
stuff in a weight, in a tube, right?
Oh, God. I'm not going to tell people how I'm going to make my own tune mass damper, but I literally just figured it out.
Okay. And there's a new Salsa e-bike, the Moraine C all-mountain e-bike. It's the updated one. They've had that out for a while, and this is the updated version. Has a full carbon frame now, and I believe I read in this article it is 44 pounds. And this is one time that the comment section was kind of helpful. Someone said that the Fazua is extremely unreliable and their customer service is non-existent.
Anyways.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't work in a bike shop anymore, so I don't really know, but I don't know. Something to think about, I guess. Maybe one of our listeners could confirm or refute that. And the last thing I've got open that I think is interesting, federal legislation is going to address the e-moto issue. And I think that's good. I think that's something that should have been done a long time ago. But yeah, so I think it's time to stop calling e-motos. I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying that right now they're being very much abused and, you know, because they're just unregulated, right? So it's a motorcycle. It's a full-on motorcycle. They're, you know, categorized as a class 2 e-bike, but it's a motorcycle. And, you know, kids are, especially this is the main complaint I see, is that kids are riding them on streets. They're getting hurt pretty fucking bad. I saw a headline that in California, like the state of California is prosecuting parents of a kid who ran into the side of a car and was seriously injured while he was on one. So yeah, like that's good that this is finally being, you know, I think that we should just do a full recategorization and say that we have class 1 and class 3 e-bikes. Probably don't rename those, just keep people from getting confused, and just get rid of class 2 altogether and just say you have a motorcycle. You know, like two of those classes are bikes and one of those is just motorcycles. So, you know,
Then why would it be a class 2 e-bike? It's not a bike.
Well, yeah, like I think that we should just get rid of that moniker altogether. Like that
term. But there's bikes that exist in that space.
Oh, you mean like the ones that are like their pedal and throttle? And I've seen people say that you can get pedal kits for your electric motorcycle to make it look like a bike.
Yeah, I mean, like the Specialized Globe Hall is a class 2 bike.
Or maybe just redefine class 2.
No, it's not a fucking bike. All the things that you're talking about right now are not bicycles. They're motorcycles. That's like saying
take those out of the class 2 category then?
They're not even in the class 2 category. They're like shoehorned into there with total bullshit. So,
yeah.
That's like saying let's change this category of vehicles. No, that's not a car. That's a fucking airplane. It's just totally different.
All right. Well, so hopefully the only thing that I'm afraid of with this is just that the people who are going to make this law don't know enough about bicycles to legislate the difference between a bicycle and a motorcycle.
Legislation is always outpaced by...
It's always reactive.
Well, yeah.
But you can be reactive with legislation and bring in experts to teach you about things or consult experts or something. But I think there are plenty of other categories where legislation has been made by people who don't fully understand what they are legislating. And that's my fear, is that we're going to end up with laws that are set by people who have like just a very, you know, 5 million foot flyover view of the difference between a bicycle and a motorcycle, which I know sounds dumb, but I've seen some pretty dumb legislation by people who don't know what they're making rules about. And hopefully that doesn't happen here, or hopefully it's going to happen, but hopefully it's minimized.
Okay, what else we got?
Well, that's all I got. I was looking at this ProLogo pressure mapper thing for saddle or bike fitting, which it looks pretty cool. I like it, but I don't know. ProLogo saddles generally aren't, I don't think they're that popular with a lot of riders. And this one is, it says it fits on anything, but it is, if you look at it, it is very ProLogo shaped. So hopefully it's not that shitty.
Okay.
You got anything?
Nah.
All right. We had a few questions, listener questions. So from Eric, he says, "Hey, JRA, I'm signed up for the Pikes Peak Apex gravel race in mid-June out of Colorado Springs, and my wife will be doing the shorter mountain bike race as well. And coming from Michigan, I have no experience with riding in the mountains. I understand that the elevation will definitely set me back in terms of aerobic performance, but what I don't know is what to be prepared for in terms of weather and gear. Is it almost a guarantee to be in the rain at some point? I simply don't ride in the rain here, so that'll be new. What else should I know for riding in the mountains? Any other tips? Thanks." We did talk a few episodes ago. I mean, it was really just maybe like 3 episodes ago, I think, about a guy that was coming up to do some vacationing and was wondering where to ride. And we gave a lot of tips about dealing with the elevation as far as food, hydration, and whatnot. You can definitely expect that, well, most of the time, I'll say like 90% of the time in the summertime in Colorado, the weather pattern is some sort of precipitation in an area in the afternoons. Usually a thunderstorm, it's usually pretty quick, but you really just kind of dress for whatever the weather is predicted to be as far as like the amount of sun, the temperature, that kind of stuff, and carry a rain jacket. Anything, you know, whatever you have, you don't have to go out and buy something new.
It has to be a Castelli squall jacket.
No, just carry a rain jacket with you, because if you do get caught in one of those afternoon thunderstorms, then you're going to want to just stop, throw that on, and wear it until the rain's gone and you're warmed back up, and you just stow it back in your pocket or a pack on your bike or something like that. It does need to be waterproof. Water resistant, that tends to just soak through and then your clothes end up soaked, and it's, you know, you can get pretty uncomfortable. I don't know what your course is. I know Colorado Springs has a relatively low elevation compared to where we are.
I mean, but they go up Gold Camp, so.
Yeah, I don't know how high you get. So it can get pretty damn cold during those storms, but that's why you want a waterproof jacket, because they're a little warmer and they're going to keep your clothes drier underneath. You're still going to have a little sweat and condensation, but you won't just be soaked all the way through. So that's going to be important.
I mean, on the big one, you get over 10.
Okay. And you also, you might want that jacket too. Like if there's a long descent, you know, if you climb from whatever Colorado Springs is, like 6,000 feet or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you climb up to 10,000 feet, you're hot when you get to the top. But after, you know, 5 to 10 minutes of descending and not pedaling, you're going to get real cold. So you might want that jacket with you just to put on, even if it's not raining, for that descending part. So, you know, just a good idea. Have a waterproof jacket of some sort. If it's packable, that's wonderful. If it's not, maybe find a bike bag or something that it fits into. Or if you carry a Camelback or whatever. But yeah, a waterproof jacket's going to be your big thing. Occasionally, there is just a day of rain. And that's just going to be, you know, you probably want some rain pants. You probably want, you know, you're going to want that waterproof jacket. It's just rain. That's pretty rare, but it does happen sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, but you descend, you finish the race with a 13-mile, over 2,000-foot descent, and that's where that squall, like, I'm not joking, like, that squall jacket is perfect. It fits in a jersey pocket, and...
Is it waterproof or water-resistant?
It's water and windproof.
Okay, yeah.
But it fits in a jersey pocket.
Oh, they're on sale right now.
Well, if you wear a large, they are.
I mean, it's a pretty, like, slim-fitting jacket, so that would fit most men who ride bikes, unless they're just tiny.
I wouldn't mind an extra large in mine. A large is okay. I wouldn't mind an extra large. I don't think a large is going to fit well over a layer, but it fits well over...
Just a summer jersey.
A jersey. The pinch point for me is the forearm. Which is nice, because you don't want a big flappy forearm. You know, like, you don't want to just hear, like, I mean, and I'm half joking but half serious. Like, that jacket is rad. You can wear it when it's just, like, I've taken it on rides. I mean, and this is replacing my Gore-Tex Shake Dry. And I've worn this for 5 minutes on a ride before, or, you know, 15 minutes on a ride before. And I'm like, cool. And then it just goes, like, I started the climb and, like, stuck it in my pocket once I was warmed up, so I just didn't have to shiver. And that's even on like an hour mountain bike ride. So
yeah, and I'm assuming the race starts relatively early in the morning, and it can be pretty chilly. So you might, you know, again, like, it's multi-purpose, because you're gonna want to put it on. And I can tell you, like, 45 and 50 degrees in Colorado is not as cold as 45 and 50 degrees in Michigan. Because of the humidity and the solar intensity. So, you know, just having that layer is a good idea. And I wouldn't say, unless you just want more gear, if you already have a waterproof jacket that you have a way of carrying with you, don't go and buy something just for one race.
You're already traveling from Michigan to Colorado, buy the jacket. I'm just going to be really argumentative here. Like, do not bring your Patagonia rain jacket with you. Like, you're big, like, oh, I wear this when it's rainy on a hike, or, like, the rain jacket that I take fishing with me. Like, that's going to be miserable. It's going to ride terrible. It's not going to breathe well, so you're going to hold a lot more sweat than something. Like,
a nice rain jacket has zippable armpits.
Okay. And my last argument was going to be, it's going to be big and floppy.
It is.
And it's
going to
be really annoying. And it takes up so much room. And the last thing you want to do is travel a third of the way across the country and then be like, this jacket's too big. I'm going to leave it in my hotel room.
Okay, so you get two different answers. I say use whatever rain jacket you have and don't worry about buying a new one. Matt says get one that is packable and comfortable to wear on a bike without floppy. Choice is yours.
Other riding in the mountain tips?
The moose have the right-of-way.
So like, do the cows.
Yeah, like if cows not quite as much as moose, but like, look, if there's a moose standing in the road, don't ride around it. Just let it get off of the road and then pass by there as quickly as you can because they're not friendly. The reason why they aren't moving isn't because they're friendly. The reason why they're not moving is because they're not fucking afraid of you. They're angry animals and they occasionally, every now and then, out of all the animals in Colorado, they kill people the most often.
So imagine this. You have something larger than a bull, like a bovine bull, and it has the temperament of a wasp, but it doesn't sting you. It tramples you to death with its big fucking murder hooves, aka each limb is a hammer.
Yeah.
So
yeah. If you do get caught in a thunderstorm and you're 10,000 feet, it's not quite as bad. But if you see people who are like local to Colorado and they're starting to like get off their bike and hide under like rocks and stuff, you should probably also do that. Most of the time, the thunderstorms on that area, like, you know, from like the front range, like the bottom of the mountains to like 10,000 feet, are not going to be extraordinarily violent. But, you know, just, you know, if you were at really high elevation and above tree line, like that is an emergency situation where you need to take shelter under something that's not the tallest object around.
It's a mountain. It's a race. So if it starts raining and people are hiding, stay in the saddle and hammer because you're passing all of them.
That was
death before dishonor.
That was my strategy once and I almost died, but I did win the race. But I think that pretty much covers it.
I would say so.
Okay. Let's go to this one. What do you think of giants? This is from someone named My Wool Socks Are Wet. Hey guys, love the show. Been a listener for a long time. I really appreciate your take on the industry. What do you think of Giant's move to Boulder? Where did they... I remember this a while back, and I don't remember the details. Where are they moving from?
I mean, they're moving from California to Boulder.
I was going to say the price of living will go up for all the employees, but if they're moving from California to Boulder, it might actually go... It'll be the same or slightly less.
I think that's something that the bike industry does a poor job of, which is... Like, I don't fucking care where you're based. I just don't. And you know what Fox did? They moved from California to Georgia, and dudes went from, like, sharing an apartment to owning their own house on the same pay. So, I understand there is an allure of, let's call it, you know, oh, Boulder, it's so cool, it's biking, man. But, like, unless you're going to pay people a lot of fucking money, like, $100,000, it's going to suck because they're going to have to drive 45 minutes from like out in the plains to come to work every day. And I don't know, put your bike company in Bentonville. Cost of living there is so much lower. Put your bike company in.
It's lower, but it's not a conspiracy theory anymore. It's actually proven now, like in Bentonville, the real estate investors are definitely profiting off of the higher cost of living. It's not as high as Colorado, I'll give them that, but I think they are trying to make it higher. So
okay, then put your bike company in Pueblo. Put
yeah,
your bike
you
company in, God, I don't know, like have your company near Windrock in Tennessee. I mean, there's so many places that could be. Tennessee doesn't have state income tax, so, you know, you're giving people a huge bump there. I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff. One of the things that's not cool is this piece of metal in my finger, but I don't really think a lot about it, and I honestly don't care. I don't sell Giant. I don't have anything to do with Giant.
I mean, they should have a pretty big base for, like, as long as they're going to pay. That's the thing is... And if they've been in California, the cost of living in California is pretty damn high. So, like I said, it might not be a difference, be much of a difference, but I do know that in Colorado, people are pretty sensitive to businesses that aren't paying enough that an employee can at least have like a one room apartment. So, yeah, hopefully they, Matt's going to actually look it up. So we have science. But yeah, as long as they're going to pay people enough to live there and work, they should be all right. They should be able to find employees, because that's the thing. If you're any company, but especially a bike-related company in Colorado, if you're actually paying your employees enough that they can live, you will not have a shortage of employees, because there are a lot of people that ride bikes around here, and if they have the opportunity to survive and possibly thrive by working in the bike industry, then you're going to get people that want to work for you. You know, if you're not paying that much, then it's going to be hard for you to find people to work for you.
It looks like the living wage reduces by about $4.30 from
California to Boulder.
Yeah, California is $31.41 and Boulder is $27.09.
There you go.
And I did do the work of, I'm looking at the same source. I'm using livingwage.mit.edu for both. And yeah.
All right. Let's go to the next one.
Let's see. I'm going to look up one more thing. Required income after taxes. $53,139 versus $46,288.
Oh, that's the same one I just opened. This is just a shout out from Full Face Ray Ray. I got to meet him and Matt got to meet him at the last trials event that Matt went to. And that was really cool to meet someone. He invited us to, there's a adaptive, let's see, a usable trail roundtable for adaptive users on May 21st at the National Sports Center for Disabled at Jefferson County Fairgrounds. And if you want to go, we would love to have you.
Cool.
Thank you for the invite. And it was great to meet you. And I appreciate that he asked, he's like, do you do hugs? And I said no, and gave him a fist bump. And I very much appreciate that, because that is, I don't know, that's just a nice thing to do.
Now, I'm going to check my calendar. May is a bad month for me.
May is always pretty busy. Aren't you visiting Memphis, or no, your parents are going to be here? I don't remember. I know you're busy in May.
So, looks like May 2nd and 3rd, I'll do a moto event. And then May 9th, I'll have the 12 hours of Mesa Verde. The following weekend is your birthday. The weekend after that, wait, did you say the 21st?
Yeah. So it's on a Thursday.
There's a good chance I can make that work. And I would like to see it in person. So, yeah. And then the next weekend, or Sunday through Saturday, like 24th through the 30th, my parents are here. My whole family except for two. So,
thank you again, Full Face Ray Ray. And our final listener question from Tyson says, why are lefty bikes still a thing? Who asks for only half a fork? Is there any actual advantage? I see these for sale used all the time. You know, when lefties first came out, cross-country forks sucked. And those sucked less than other cross-country forks. They were lighter and stiffer. They handled better.
They were way plusher.
Yeah, like everything about the lefty was better than that. Like when, at the time when lefties came out, everything about a lefty was, other than the wheel compatibility thing and like just the shit you have to deal with maintenance and whatnot, everything was better versus the cross-country forks available at the time. Now they're just not. And the same thing goes for the RS1, the RockShox RS1. Same thing. It wasn't lighter, but handled better, was just a better performing product. But cross-country forks have gotten good, really good. And there's just not really a reason to have lefties anymore. I don't know why they stick with it, other than just it's what they've always done.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add to that. I mean,
so there used to be an actual advantage. There's really not anymore. Hopefully someone gets upset by that and leaves us an angry mail about it. But that's all we've got. We might actually have a good patron question. Hold on. I don't mean actually like our patron questions suck. It's just that, let's see. had, who do you recommend for bike fit in Denver? And I mean, everyone said Pedal Fit PT, which is definitely the best bike fit in Denver. We've got a really good one from Nick, and he says, I'm riding the I'm going to let you read this. My voice is like dying. Can you see it okay?
Riding the Cocopelli Trail in 1 month, and I have two bike options to consider, an SB140 or a Salsa Fargo. I have an XE wheel set that works on both bikes that currently has Recon 2.4s on it and was planning to use them basically as is. But if I use the Fargo, I consider going to a fatter tire. Both bikes run GX, so the Salsa is Axis, so I need to futz with a battery if I bring it. We have someone meeting us at the campsite each night with a truck and supplies, so I'll really only be carrying food and water for the day, layers and other small equipment such as tools, pumps, sunscreen, etc., which I know I can carry on both bikes no problem because I have in the past. What would you bring? The trade-off is clearly comfort versus efficiency, but not being familiar with the terrain, I'm not sure which I'll have more fun on. I brought the SB40 on the white rim a few years ago, and I appreciated the flat bars and suspension after a few days of riding. Slightly a lot. I had a 130 at the time, but it broke, and Yeti replaced it with the 140. I would say I would take the mountain bike. And the reason I would take the mountain bike is you just said for multiple days you liked flat bars and suspension. And also, I would take the mountain bike because it is a trail. It's not a road. And unless you're just like, oh my God, everyone that I'm going with is some ultra fit roadie and they're going to destroy me on every climb and then I'm going to be really bored on every descent, there's no reason to ride the less capable bike. That's my thoughts.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it depends on how fast. It sounds like you said each night. I've even forgotten how long the Cocopelli Trail is, but it is a drivable-ish road.
140 to 160 miles.
Yeah. So, if you have someone that's going to carry stuff for you, so, like, you don't need to carry a tent and shit on your bike, yeah, I think the 140 is going to be just more comfortable. Yeah, a little slower on the climbs, but, yeah, I think you'll probably have a better time, and you're not going to be just, you know, cursing getting on your bike on the last day because your ass is chafed from rattling on the Fargo.
I mean, I don't want to ride a Fargo there.
Matt's looking at photos.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be bumpy.
Yeah, I would say if you do end up going with the Fargo, go with the biggest tires you can fit in there. Not necessarily like knobby, but just like volume.
But even like a 2.6 Recon would be...
Yeah.
I mean, that tire absolutely fucking slaps. So, yep. I don't know. Now that I'm looking at it more closely, like, I still wouldn't take the Fargo. If I was you, I'd take a Kona Heihei G. Got them in stock. I'll sell you one.
Maybe a Fargo with a suspension fork.
No. Doesn't get around the problem of drop bars, which he didn't enjoy, or he was happy to have flat bars on white rim. So
yeah, that's true. Put a flat bar on your Fargo and a suspension fork, and there you go.
Make the world's worst hardtail and go ride that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just buy a Kona Hanzo for $1,300 instead of spending $800 in parts and whatnot. I'm just selling people bikes.
All right.
Is it time for patron?
It's patron time.
Oh, God. I'm tired even though it's like 1 in the afternoon.
You just had to fit that yawn in there.
It just hit me.
All right. Our patrons starting at $10 per month. We got Kurt, Skunk in Your Trap, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, Burt Reynolds Crusty Stash, Zozo, Eric, Burt Reynolds Mustache, Taper Bore Pro, My Pal Dell, MTB Shenanigans,
Mike Jones,
Cam Irish One, Tennessee Zach, Green Giant, AJ, Leland. We all know how Matt's asshole really got chafed.
Mm-hmm.
Ride Time Extended, JC, Gordon, Josh, Fart Noises, Tom's P, Ryan, Bill, Aaron, Beaver Pelt Pocket Pool, Ty, Noah, Cool Beans.
Ooh, she nasty.
No, my name is Clayton. Frank the Tank, Goat Roper. Ball. Chat GPT. At $11.11 per month, Candace Cockfit. Patamillan Disco Ball at $14 Australian. And at $20 per month, Andrea's Hormoning Podcast. Scott, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds. Poop Wrench at $26.06 per month, Andrea, the Were Beaver Hunter. New show from the CW. Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors, now offering discounted Venezuelan fishing boat tours. It's a blast. At Fitty. All right, everyone. And I will encourage anyone who is able to sign up for our Patreon. As most things go, without all of the social media presence that I kind of ignore and whatnot, our Patreon membership is slightly down. So even if you just join for the lowest tier, we very much appreciate it. Is that all you got?
That's all we got.
All right, everyone. Thank you all for listening. Happy Easter or whatever, and good night.
Shut her down.
Afternoon.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.
There's some shit coming out of your pants.